Hello, and welcome to Season 1, Episode 4 of Goodnight Sweetcast. We got an email this week from Mark saying, it's not a season, it's a series, and you're absolutely right, and every time I say season, I kick myself and want to correct it.
People know what you mean.
It's the creeping cultural imperialism of America. What can I do about it? Not much. I'm Philip Sharman. I'm joined by Christopher Wallace.
Hello.
And special guest for today's episode, Jill Saw.
Hello.
Thank you for coming along to share your thoughts and opinions on Goodnight Sweetheart.
Thank you for having me.
Playing us in today was a version of Goodnight Sweetheart recorded by the Zoot Sims Quartet. Zoot Sims was an American jazz saxophonist playing mainly tenor and soprano.
It's very jazzy. We liked it.
Jill got to select the version that we had.
I'm always going to go for something jazzy.
In versions of Goodnight Sweetheart, as in life. Hope you're all enjoying the podcast so far. Thanks for all the response that we've been getting. Most importantly, thank you for the submissions that we've started to get for the Garrulery.
The Garrulery.
The Garrulery. Yeah. I thought you guys were pronouncing gallery wrong earlier, but now I've twigged.
It's a play on words.
I get it.
One of the cleverest I've ever been responsible for, and certainly the most satisfying to say. Have another go. Garrulery.
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 You need to throw yourself right in there and just say it.
Garrulery. I've embraced it. At first I was like, Phil, this is a terrible name, but now it's great.
Don't hold back. Tell me what you really think. We've cast the net a little bit wider on the Garrulery from where we originally started, because apparently doing drawings is too hard for most people, which is fair enough. I haven't got around to doing mine yet either. But it's coming. I promise that we will be doing our own submissions to the Garrulery soon enough.
But we've opened up the Garrulery to all sorts of art.
In particular, this week we asked for poetry. So we should be opening up a poetry corner. We've received three submissions so far. Two limericks and a haiku.
Lovely.
High art. Jill, as our guest, would you like to choose limerick one, limerick two, or the haiku?
I'd quite like the haiku. Oh, right. This is brilliant. It gets right to the heart of Goodnight Sweetheart. Gary is a bad man. He thinks he is the Beatles, but he is a dick.
It's beautiful.
It is.
I'm not surprised by who submitted that one.
That was Jack from Wikishuffle.
Yeah, there's no surprise there.
Chris.
Limerick 2.
Limerick 2 is from @monkeyshakes on Twitter.
There once was a liar called Gary. In the 90s and 40s did marry. Only best friend Ron truly knew where he'd gone, what heavy old burden to carry.
That's good.
Wow.
It's a nicely constructed limerick there. And another limerick, this time from @exception379 on Twitter. There was a young man called Gary who went for a stroll down an alley. He walked into a pub and caused quite a hubbub, for with the barmaid he did dally.
I like that.
I like it too. I don't think that Gary and Ali, I'm not sure that that's an acceptable rhyming couplet.
It's a tough one.
It's fine.
The very last line might be a tad contrived, and I'm not sure that the syllable structure quite works.
Phil,
there's one too many syllables in there.
I'm worried if you put too much criticism into the poetry, then people might not submit anymore.
We're going to drive them away.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, exception 379. That is an excellent limerick, faultless in every way.
I liked it.
I liked it too. Hubbub. I'm never gonna criticise use of the word hubbub in the modern world.
I love a hubbub.
Thank you for that. Keep them coming. You can send us actual physical artwork in the real world, like in the olden times, through the post by sending it to WikiShuffleHQ, 1B Headlands, Kettering, NN157ER, or you can email us podcast@wikishuffle.co.uk.
And don't forget, I would also like to see some photographs from the early 90s.
Have you managed to find any photographs of yourself from the 1990s?
No, I haven't. But I can.
Well, I think you need to.
In fact, there is a picture that was on a billboard in Germany of me in 1993.
What? No, there wasn't.
Yes, there was. For Kyocera printers.
Sorry, slow down. Slow this right down.
Wait, you were the Kyocera printer baby?
Yeah.
Hang on, this is too weird. We've been doing WikiShuffle for a year and a half, and there's an anecdote of this size that you haven't yet been able to tell on the podcast. Tell us about your exploits as a child star, child model.
Wow. As a child, I was on this poster for a printer company, and it was me, as a child, standing next to a printer dressed in grown-up clothes that were much too big for me. These printers are so easy, even this toothless child can use them. And I was in that.
I would like more than anything that I have ever wanted in my life to see that picture.
I've been trying for a long time to find it, and I can't.
So this was your first job, and you got booked on the spot. And then you didn't take that any further?
I never got any more opportunities.
Oh, do you think the problem was that you got typecast at a young age?
Maybe.
What we're really here to talk about is episode 4 of series 1. The episode is called The More I See You, which is a popular song originally sung by Dick Hames in the 1945 film Diamond Horseshoe. Are you familiar with the film Diamond Horseshoe?
I can't say it's one I've seen.
Sounds like an uppity horse.
The best films are about uppity horses.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you think it has a fall from grace?
Got too big for its boots because it won a couple of like races and then it didn't want to hang around with the other horses anymore. Got its diamond horseshoes on and then eventually it realised it needed its friends.
A morality tale.
Yeah. So is that what it is?
Well, I don't know. They do actually, in a stroke of the meta, the final scene of this episode, they do actually play out with that song playing at the discotheque. I say discotheque.
Huddersfield Uni.
Huddersfield Uni Student Bar, which is where the episode ends. But we're not at the end, we're at the beginning, and we will go through this episode chronologically, as we do every week. As always, there will be spoilers for this episode. If you haven't seen it yet and you are watching along, we do recommend that you watch the episode first and then listen to us, rather than the other way around, because we are going to spoil. But we won't offer any spoilers for future episodes that we haven't talked about yet. Those are the rules. Is that clear?
Yes,
okay.
Phil.
Okay, Phil gave me a really stern look then,
Chris.
He does,
Chris. Doesn't he? He does
that
sometimes.
Scared. I kind of understand what you have to go through now.
I know, all the time.
I just want there to be order. Is that so much to ask? We open in 1993. Gary is looking through a selection of wallpaper charts.
Did you catch where he got his wallpaper book from? He got it from Wally's Wallpaper World. He said it to Yvonne when she asked where he'd been. He'd been to Wally's Wallpaper World, which he might be making that up, but he does work at Rumbelows, so I'll just go with it.
Sounds like a crazy DIY theme park.
Wally's World of Wallpaper.
Yeah.
It's good, though.
While Rumbelows was real, I suspect that Wally's Wallpaper World may have been a fabrication.
Wally's World of Wallpaper.
I apologise to you and to Wally.
I don't know. You have to tell me if these are real, because I just go with it.
I don't think so, but I'm not the world's authority on the 1990s, so if you do a quick Google search.
Are you betting no, then, Phil?
I'm betting... My money's on no.
I'm going to say yes.
The only thing that comes up is about this particular episode of Goodness We Are.
Oh.
Implies to me that it may have been created with some artistic license.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it's good you're here, Phil, because I wouldn't know that.
There is a slightly strange accusation from Yvonne, where she describes Gary as Pierre Le Puff for being interested in the decorating and the interior design. He himself criticises her homophobia, mm-hmm. which is nice. So there was an awareness of what was going on here, but it still resonated a little odd.
It did seem strange. It's just an odd joke.
Because what he did was he was referred to as Pierre Le Puff. From that, he took, oh, so she must be attacking me for my sexual prowess.
That's where he went with it, yes.
Yeah, which is a really odd way to take it.
That was really, really strange, because she hadn't mentioned anything like that at all. His comeback was just, so you don't think I'm good in bed then? What's that all about?
Because he's learning psychology.
Well, but the whole thing is about how emasculated he's feeling. So he's going to turn to thinking about his sexual performance, isn't he, mm-hmm. really?
That's why he feels so comfortable when he goes back to the 40s, because he knows everything that's going to happen. So he feels like he's empowered because he has all this knowledge and he gets to be a superhero. And we love Phoebe. Well, I love Phoebe.
Are you falling more in love with Phoebe every episode? The more you see her?
Yeah, very much. It's really working for me.
Going back to the feeling of Gary's emasculation, you do question how justified it is or whether he's engineering that. Because quite a lot of what Yvonne says, it's not actually attacking him at all, but he will immediately assume that it is.
Yeah.
And that's the avenue that he'll take, that he is being personally chided by this woman who he loves.
I ultimately think that he wants Yvonne to leave him, and then everything will work itself out in a nice little bow. I'd be well in the 40s now. After episode 1, I would have been like, me and Phoebe.
This is more about your love of Phoebe than anything else, though.
Yeah. Gary shares the same feelings towards Phoebe that I do.
Do you think you feel like you're becoming more in the mindset of Gary Sparrow the more you watch it?
An internal battle I have every week now to stop myself transforming fully Leatherhurst.
Do you think you're going to grow 8 foot tall before the end of this podcast?
And then I'll be in the 40s and I'll leave you behind.
Is Phil Ron in this situation?
Right, it sounds like I'm Yvonne.
Right, yeah. But it's funny, though, because Gary's obviously the 90s world of metrosexuality is coming to the fore and women are becoming more independent. Mm. He's not ready for that world. He's feeling emasculated. But he can't do the right thing and man up and leave Yvonne if that's what he really wants to do. He still wants her to take control in that situation, even though he's constantly grasping for control.
Next, we find out that the reason that he's looking at these wallpapers is he's going to redecorate the bedroom while...
I'd start with the living room. Probably the most intense living room scenes that we've seen. We've seen the most of the blue, the sea of blue. That room could be done first. If I was his wife, I would say, Gary, yeah, the living room, this is more and more of a priority. And any colour, anything other than blue, anything.
I don't necessarily take offence to the blue. It's the patterns. Every crazy pattern patterns. Just thrown into that room. There's a whole crazy clash of patterns going on there.
And the three pyramids against the back wall. I don't like them.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Nobody notices the pyramids. Look out for the pyramids.
Well, my eyes had a lot of work to do.
That's true.
They definitely do. We learnt a little bit more from the writer's commentary on this episode about how the blue came to be. And there was a production meeting before designing the sets, and they were asked, well, so what colour do you think that Gary and Yvonne's house would be? And Gran and Marx responded, oh, we think blue. They ran with that idea, an all or nothing commitment to the blue.
Like their marriage.
Although like Gary's feelings.
Gary's feeling blue.
He's feeling all shades of blue.
Oh, but in the 40s it's all sepia. Red passion.
Yeah.
Ooh. It's a bit of a tenuous thing, but okay, not that one.
Someone asked us if Phoebe was wearing a red coat to denote that she's a Scarlet Woman, but I think she's wearing a red coat because that's the colour of coat that the wardrobe designer got hold of.
People will write essays and essays about the meanings behind things, and actually at the end of the day...
It's just whatever's there.
It's whatever's there at the time.
Just get it done. We've got a deadline to meet.
I remember having to write a big long essay about Mission Impossible 2. They didn't think about Mission Impossible 2 that deeply. Nobody
so
did.
Your school chose Mission Impossible 2 as a cinematic.
Through media, I remember watching the climbing scene at the beginning over and over again for something that I don't think was there when Tom Cruise was scaling that rock.
To be fair, I think Mission Impossible 2 is probably the wrong choice of film for film criticism.
Yeah.
Depending on what angle you're coming from, I guess. Yeah.
Gary's reaction, as is always the way, is to deflect and reflect and point the finger. And so we go from this suggestion of his lack of manliness to counter-arguing that she's on her way up to Huddersfield for this Open University weekend and is probably going to have an affair with her tutor.
It's quite a leap, isn't it?
It's a dick move, is what it is.
Yeah.
If you don't want me to decorate our bedroom while you're away, just say the
Gary,
word.
Gary, I was just saying...
Because I won't have anything better to do, will I? Because I'll be on my own, won't I? From Friday to Monday, while you're off living it up at University College Huddersfield.
Gary, this residential weekend is a crucial part of my Open University course.
Oh, silly me. And there's me thinking that it's an excuse to get drunk and misbehave like real students.
Well, you're wrong. I've been working on my essay for nearly 2 months, and it's vitally important I make a good impression on my tutor.
Oh, just in case he doesn't like your essay, you better remember to pack your suspenders.
There's multi-layers to this insult. One layer is, you can only succeed at this if you shag your tutor.
Mm-hmm.
Offensive, because
terrible.
It suggests that she hasn't got any innate capability of doing it. The other is to suggest that that's something that's in her motivation, that she'd think that that would be an okay thing to do. Thirdly, it's without any sort of evidence at all. He's not basing this on anything. He's purely deflecting what he knows that he might do in that circumstance, as we've proven, that the first flash of barmaid that he gets and he's like a whip it up a drainpipe. That's not the phrase, is it? What's the phrase I'm looking for?
It's like a rat up a drainpipe.
I'm not very good at the euphemisms, at the laddie euphemisms, and there are plenty in this episode.
But I really liked her comeback to him as she left the room. She had the last word, and it was the best thing.
It was good.
No, I'll get a good grade, because I've put a hell of a lot of work into my essay. And then I'll sleep with my tutor, because he's gorgeous.
Zing!
I left him soaking into his Wally's book of wallpapers.
Next stop, Ron's print shop.
So random. And so contrived that Ron just works in a print shop just when Gary needs some papers.
It's very useful, but the groundwork is placed in an earlier episode. Oh. He has been established as working in a print shop. It was in the very first scene he said about when he did his printer training, he was one of the last people to go through some sort of initiation rite.
Oh, yeah, that was it.
Obviously, it's been engineered because it's useful for the story, and fair enough, that's how you create a world,
that's
isn't it?
That's how it works. Do you guys still find it weird that Ron and Gary met at this party in episode one? And now there seem to be such close friends.
We've agreed to pretend it never happened.
Put it into the back of your mind.
We've retconned that.
Okay.
And we don't believe that scene is pertinent, except for the bit where it establishes he's a printer, which we think is pertinent. Oh, we just pick and choose. We're like biblical scholars.
That's exactly it. Yeah, that definitely helps, because if it was me and I had to tell someone that I was a time traveller, I feel like I could tell you two and you would go, okay. And believe me to a certain extent. Or at least think there's something wrong.
I don't think I'd believe you, Chris. I'll be perfectly honest.
If I told you I was a time traveller.
I know, I would believe that you believe you're a time traveller, but I'd probably believe that you would need help. I'd want you to prove it. I'd be like Ron. I'd be like, take me with you.
Yeah, okay, I'd have to prove it to you. If I could prove it to you.
I'd believe you. Or I'd think that somehow you'd pulled me into your own psychotic break.
It's always a risk.
But I wouldn't even mention this to a stranger that I'd only met at a party.
I don't know. I've never been in the situation where I've time travelled, so it's hard to say really how I'd react.
To begin with, because, you know, the first resort in any conversation for Gary is always going to be to lie, he fabricates a story where he needs a set of papers printed by Ron for the Brent Literary Festival. If you can make your lie nice and obscure, then maybe people are more willing to believe it. Is that the logic that he's going for, perhaps? Because sometimes you'd think, well, that's so outlandish.
There
it
is a line
true.
With that, though, isn't there? There is a point where you build it up too much that people think he's clearly lying because he's thought about it too much.
People usually say the best lies to tell are ones that have a sort of sprinkling of the truth in. And also, if someone told me that, I'd probably go with a follow-up question, just like, why?
Ron wasn't buying this bullshit. And I think Ron seems to see through Gary's lies more than anybody. He doesn't believe that these papers are for
the Brent
Literary Festival, which they're not. Gary decides to come clean, so they go to the side office in the print shop, which looked like it must have been filmed at a real print shop. There's no way they'd have gone to the trouble of getting those machines in. Mm. And I did notice that they'd got a proper health and safety poster up, so well done for displaying that in a prime location, as is the law.
Are you the health and safety officer at work?
Might be.
Because I have to say, when I came to Wikishuffle HQ, you did not tell me where the fire exits were.
You came in through the fire exit.
Still.
I apologise for not going through the full health and safety procedure.
Do you know, he's looking quite calm and composed now, but the second you leave, he'll just break down.
I'm writing a procedure in my head. Gary goes for the truth. Your suspicions, Ron, that I might be travelling back in time to 1940 are correct. I've got myself a Phoebe.
I thought to myself, at various points in the episodes, Lyndhurst's acting is actually pretty good here. But I felt like there needed to be a bit more reluctance here. I didn't feel like he wanted to hold back his secret at all. He just sort of blurted it out.
Did you not feel a little bit he wanted to show off the fact that he'd got this other bird on the go?
That's probably what it was, actually. But maybe he needed to make that more obvious. I would have liked to have seen Ron draw it out of him a bit more.
Ron's very interested, because his response is, and I liked this turn of phrase, what's this Phoebe Tart like? Is she willing? Oh, dear.
Ron's not very likeable in this scene, I don't think.
No, and he's likeable a lot of the time, but not in this one.
Yeah.
I didn't like that line. In future developments, Ron very much takes on the role of Gary's conscience, and he's done completely the opposite there, and I think that that was a misstep in how I'd have wanted to see Ron react.
If your friend is having an affair and cheating on their wife, you should question that with them. You shouldn't fully accept that.
You should intervene, yes. And he even goes so far as to say, oh, it's not adultery because you're not even alive yet, so how can you be cheating? And it's like, well, no, that's...
They keep doing that. That's happened a lot in the last couple of episodes. Well, it can't count because she's not there in where I am. She's not actually physically real, so I don't need to feel bad about it. It's like that thing people say when it's like, oh, it doesn't matter if you're on holiday.
What happens in Ibiza stays in Ibiza.
So what happens in the
40s? Oh, it is supposed to be Vegas, isn't it? But I've just made that more
really
of
relevant to us.
Cheeky Essex phrase.
Yeah, what happens in the 40s stays in the 40s.
Nonetheless, Ron agrees that he's going to make these papers for him. Problem solved. Everything's fine in Gary World again. He's got what he wanted.
On one condition.
Oh, of course, on one very critical condition.
That Ron gets to come back with him through the time tunnel.
He doesn't say that, though, does he? It sort of ends scene when
yeah,
he says,
it's like a
but
cheeky.
On one condition. And then yeah. You're kind of like, ooh. You know what it's going to be, obviously,
oh, yeah.
though.
Gary's theme.
On one condition, I really want to listen to Gary's theme.
Well, yeah, that's what they were probably listening to in the car. So I listen to in the car now.
So we're back in the blue room. The blue world's room. Bluest room. Decorated in Gary's blue period. The babby doo babby doo dooby doo dooby doo dooby dooby doo boo.
I like that it's now referred to as the blue room as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, we're back in the blue room. For some reason, the makeup department have gone a little bit overboard. More blusher for Mr. Lyndhurst, please.
He's highly rouged.
He is rouged up.
And his red jumper as well.
Might be the red jumper that's accentuating his rouge levels, but he's been in makeup a little bit too long here, and he's positively glowing. Yvonne enters. She's got a suitcase, and she empties the contents all over Gary's lap.
Gary's asleep at the time.
He's having a nap, been busy.
Thinking about wallpaper.
Why is she so upset?
She's been up in the loft and found a suitcase full of strange things.
Like, is this where he keeps all his chocolate and fags and stockings?
Was his hat and his trench coat in there as well, or not? I can't remember.
It probably was. I imagine that's where he keeps it. As his wife, what would you assume if you'd gone into the loft, unlocked the suitcase, because Gary's got a rubbish password, and found this stuff in there? I wouldn't necessarily assume that he was cheating on anyone.
The stockings, you'd probably think armed robber. But that's the only thing a man would use stockings for in this day and
yeah.
age.
If he has already set up that premise of 1940s theme bar, that he's really obsessed with the 1940s, why can't he come up with a good excuse?
Well, isn't the excuse that he's planning a surprise birthday for her?
Which is terrible.
Stockings and chocolate.
And cigarettes in a suitcase.
Happy birthday! I bought you all your favourite presents!
Well, the other week, he did bring her some kidneys.
So he's not got a good grasp on gift giving.
The other week, he turned up with some loose kidneys in a bag. That he didn't understand why Yvonne didn't appreciate this. So maybe it is the sort of thing that she would go, actually, Gary is a fucking idiot.
I mean, it's so sad, isn't it, that you can't come up with a better lie. When all he does is lie. Constantly looks as well when someone asks him one of those questions on the spot, like he's about to blurt out the truth. Yeah. I'm a time traveller!
Well, he actually does. He sarcastically says, oh, I've got all of these things for when I go back to 1940s to take to my 1940 girlfriend. He says that in those exact terms.
Nice. Is that a genius move? I mean, I think that's quite smart.
There's no way that what's actually happened could ever be registering as something she might think about.
Hmm.
Except Ron. Ron figured it out on his own.
Joke of the week!
There's no audio clip of this week's joke of the week because it's a visual gag. Ron thinks he's going to be travelling back to 1940 with Gary, and so he's got himself a 1940 suit.
Actually, looks like he's going to a fancy dress party, dressed as Al Capone. He looks pretty gangster in it.
It's a brown pinstripe three-piece number. It's too small for him. His shirt's kind of untucked. It's dishevelled. The most effective part of the joke and why it works is that they don't really talk about it, which is the best way to play any visual gag. If it can just sit there, if they can just let it hang and be there in the background, and they do it perfectly. It's not overplayed either. They could have made it smaller and tighter and more ridiculous. That would have been too much.
It makes you think of the backstory behind that suit. He probably didn't have a lot of time to get a 1940s outfit together.
It tells about Ron's enthusiasm, how much he wants to follow Gary around, and how he's a bit of a soppy Labrador, which is generally how his character's portrayed throughout the series. But he may as well not have bothered. He may as well not have bothered. As effective a visual gag as his get-up is, he's not allowed.
Because there are rules.
What I didn't quite understand watching it was, when Ron follows and comes out of the other side of the passage, it's just normal 1990s. If he hadn't stopped to tie his shoelace and was closer, would he be able to get through?
Well, we're pretty sure that nobody else is allowed through, but the stuff that he's carrying and that's in contact with him is allowed through.
So, if he was to hold hands with Ron, or drag him along in a suitcase, or on a sled even, would he be able to get through to the 1940s?
I think I might have worked out.
Go on.
Well, all the things that Gary's brought through existed during that time.
No, chocolate and cigarettes.
Oh, yeah, he brought through a big arrow, didn't he?
Big, big arrow. Big arrows would not.
Yeah, and cigarettes. But I thought I had it there.
You didn't.
Had
it. Afraid. Can't just be can't things be that, that already existed. Nice idea, though.
Yeah.
What that would have allowed, Gran and Marks, you know how we were talking about how funny it would have been if it had gone back nude? He could have done that for a couple of episodes before he realised that old stuff could travel back with him, and then they wouldn't have to worry about that problem anymore. So you'd still get the laughs of him going back naked, and then you could get rid of it later when he realises that...
The only problem is, Gary's main thing he likes to do to Phoebe is shower her with gifts.
And there'd be no more chocolate or cigarettes.
And he'd have to get things when he was there. She just got a briefcase full of stuff. Last episode, he just whipped out his fruit and nut and everybody gathered around him and he loved it. That's his favourite thing to do.
Fruit and nut, that's not a euphemism, is it?
No.
Just to be clear, this is a family show.
Can we go back to the suit for a moment? Because, Chris, you said something interesting when we were watching the...
The suit that we identified as the funniest thing that happened all episode. That suit, yeah.
Yeah.
I had a suit like that. Brown pinstripe. But it wasn't three-piece. Yeah, which means me and Ron have an affinity with each other, which I didn't expect.
You'd already commented that you really liked the badges Ron had on.
Yeah, he had some badges on his jumper.
And he was wearing the colour purple that you love. And whenever I see you, you have that particular shade of purple on you. I think you and Ron are like style twins, style buddies.
Which really offends me.
Oh!
It's the joke of the week, Phil.
It is the joke of the week, yeah.
Are you saying I'm the joker every day?
No, what I'm saying is, given the choice of whether you're going to be style buddies with Ron or Gary... You choose Ron.
I'm just thinking of a great magazine feature. Who wore it better, Chris or Ron?
Yeah, well, that would work, I suppose.
You would wear it better, then.
Yes.
Does that make you feel a bit better about the whole thing?
No, because I feel like you're just saying that to make me feel better.
Oh, shit.
A little bit.
Where did you wear that suit to?
I can't remember.
Probably. The 1940s?
Yeah.
Gary makes it through the time portal. Ron does not.
Gary doesn't even really care.
Does not give a shit.
He doesn't look back, does he?
No. Doesn't even look over his shoulder. Because he can travel back, remember?
Yeah.
So he could have gone back and gone to look for Ron. Nah, never mind that. I've got some adultery to be getting on with.
Exactly. If I was Gary and Ron didn't come through with me, my first thought wouldn't have been, oh, he's tying his shoelaces. Mine would be, he's gone to a different time. And I don't know where Ron is anymore. I'm worried Ron can't get back. I would be worried about Ron. I wouldn't just continue.
I like the way you're thinking, and that would be a really interesting twist in the plot.
Yeah, if Ron's gone back to the Stone Age.
Or into the future.
Time travel is intrinsically very complicated.
Mm.
Rather than deal with that, they've made the decision to just not.
I think that's great. Mm-hmm. Just let the audience take it at face value and not think too much about it.
Yeah, as much as I would love to see Ron in the 1980s.
Just watch an episode of Bread. You can see what Ron looked like in the 1980s. Gary has abandoned his only friend to somewhere in time without really worrying about it. But never mind. Let's get to the pub. Got more important things to do.
B.B. Bamford.
There's a look of love in your eyes when you say that, Chris.
I think as well, because when I was younger when this was on, I did quite fancy to have a look at her then.
Because my childhood crush... Because obviously I'm a few years older than you. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that on the podcast before. My childhood crush was Bonnie Langford. And Bonnie Langford makes a guest appearance in one of the episodes.
Oh, did you get that same feeling that I get when Devla Karen pops up?
A little bit.
Hmm.
Well, I've never felt that way about Nicholas Lindhurst.
No.
Not to say that he's not attractive to somebody out there.
Again, we come back to this. When we're being critical of Gary Sparrow, we are not being critical of Nicholas Lindhurst. They are not the same thing. We think that Nicholas Lindhurst does a sterling job in the role to the point where I can't imagine anybody else having the charm and the charisma and acting chops to pull this off. Somebody on Twitter this week did accuse us of being a little bit harsh to Gary. And yeah, we are, but it's done with effect.
Yeah, and you have to be critical of Gary because
he makes some terrible decisions.
Yeah.
It would be morally bereft of us to not pick him up on those decisions.
Mm. Don't aim for Gary. Learn from Gary.
That is a beautiful mantra.
Mm. I'd get that tattooed.
Just so people raise the question, who the hell's Gary?
On his way to the pub. No more thoughts about Ron. He's in a jovial mood.
He's got his papers. You know, he can carry on the lie without getting any more questions from the police. Waiting to see Phoebe. He's got his bag of stuff. Because Phoebe loves stuff.
He cheekily asks if he could have a broccoli and ricotta quiche.
Yeah.
No,
the most highfalutin food they could think of in 1993. But it seems quite pedestrian now. If the same joke was written today, they'd have used something involving quinoa and bulgur wheat, probably.
Yeah, or maybe an avocado on toast. Although, is that trend over now?
I don't know. Phil?
I do not consider avocado on toast as being over. I consider avocado on toast as being delicious. But Phoebe's gone. She has left. She's gone to stay with Aunt Dot. Gary blackmails the address out of Eric because he's a man of his convictions.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out you do just need a big aero and you can get any information that you want.
Last week it was a couple of bananas.
Eric doesn't care about his daughter that much.
I think he does, but if you haven't seen a chocolate bar in a while, you're just going
to... I'd give up a lot.
Yeah, I'd give up.
It's like, you know, when you see people getting tortured and stuff on telly.
I don't see that a lot on telly.
I do.
What are you watching?
No, if someone's getting interrogated, I don't feel like it would take long to interrogate me.
Oh, no, I'd give up straight away. Mm.
Just suggest that you might do anything anywhere near my fingernails and I'm done. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thankfully, I don't really know any secrets. The mood changes very swiftly. Aunt Dot's house has been bombed out. And I think they do a good job of switching tone here. I think that it was quite nicely done. We've talked about Nicholas Lyndhurst being an effective comedy actor. I think that Dervla Kerwin is a very effective dramatic actor. She does a very good job of turning on a dime. The house over the road had been completely flattened and a family had died. These are weighty topics.
Mm.
These are topics that were not covered by Keeping Up Appearances. That I remember. I've not seen a great deal of Keeping Up Appearances. I don't remember there being many multiple bombing deaths.
Oh, did you not see the episode with the massacre? Oh, it was a dark turn for Hyacinth.
Onslow went crazy with a machete, did he?
The other thing about Phoebe, Dervla Kerwin is a proper Irish. Proper Irish accent. And she manages to maintain this accent throughout. I'm really impressed with that. I couldn't put on an Irish accent for that long. Yeah.
We could give it a go. Maybe we'll test that theory next week and we'll have the entire episode with you doing an Irish accent.
Oh, that'll be fun. I need to practice in the mirror a few times.
Haven't you got very Irish grammar?
Yeah, there's one word that I say.
I love this word. I love it when you say this word.
What do you cook your dinner in?
I cook my dinner in an oven.
I cook it in an oven. Okay.
But I love it. I love it when you say that the most, when it just springs out of nowhere. Like when you're genuinely talking about cooking and you come out with oven.
I don't even know if that's right.
How do you say the oven? How do you say it again?
Oven.
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 Oven. No, I'm going to oven. Put chips on.
I put it in the oven.
That's what I hear when you say it, Chris.
Oh. I dress like Ron and I sound like that. Brilliant.
Do you think that there's a little apostrophe between the O and the V, that it's the O-van?
See, it works, though, doesn't it? It does sound like an Irish thing.
Mm. It's not, though. You're just mental. Phoebe's a bit upset, and she storms off, and Gary goes after her, wants to go and console her a little, and they end up walking through a cemetery. And they said on the commentary that what they really wanted to do was set this scene in a park that had been dug up for allotments, which would have been very fitting with the time, but not with budgetary constraints. Phoebe's feeling a little bit sorry for herself. She notices that Gary, the war doesn't seem to affect him in the same way. Because he's from America. That's your first bit of Cockney of the episode so far.
Love it, any chance.
I look forward to some more. I feel as though your chances with Phoebe would be severely hampered by the percentage of the time you would spend doing her own voice back at her.
Yeah, I don't think she'd go on with me.
Got to arm yourself with chocolate and bananas.
I can do that.
You'll be fine.
Mm. So she wouldn't mind if I just repeated everything she said?
It might get a bit grating after a while, I guess.
Okay. Oh, Dad!
That's it, yeah. I can have that one. Oh, Dad! Love it.
She specifically asks if he will take her back, meaning to Cricklewood, to get some respite from the bombing. His assumption is that she means 1993.
Mm.
This is hilarious, because he's on the brink of bursting out. What? To the future? You can just see it in his eyes. He's such an idiot. It's his biggest lie. It's the most important lie that he needs to keep a secret. And he's ready to blurt it out at all times.
They have a chat on the bench, and this is retreading ground that we had in the underground scene last week, I think, a bit.
Reinforcing it.
That's a better way to put it, yeah, reinforcing what we already learned last week. She's received a letter from Donald, and she says that there's nothing in the letter, because they've got no relationship, that it's all just talking about the weather, and there's no connection, and they haven't got anything in common. Which is quite a touching thing, and it's quite a big thing for her to admit, obviously.
At the same time, though, she never references the fact that he must be going through quite a hard time being a soldier. She almost reaches Gary's level of selfishness.
She's not an innocent party by any means. She could have nipped this in the bud long ago and probably should have.
Well, it becomes apparent when she says to him, "Do you really believe what you said, that after the war, people will be able to leave loveless marriages?" And she kind of looks at him all doe-eyed, as if to say, "I'll stay with you until the war's over, and then I can leave my husband and we can be together."
And Gary looks at her like, "Did I say that?" And her face changes a little bit because, you know, she doesn't want to feel like she's been led on. But Gary completely forgot that he left his big seed.
Oh, Gary's big seed.
Yeah, Gary's big seed.
Let me think about that.
So his pheromones.
Phoebe's very impressed by Gary's worldliness.
So he knows where North Africa is.
He knows not only where North Africa is, but he knows that it's hot there.
Yeah.
Oh, Gary, you're so well-travelled. Surely, even in the days before Google, the general population was aware that North Africa's hot.
I would have assumed so. Unless she's just, you know, she knows that North Africa's hot, but she's telling Gary what he wants to hear.
Yeah, that's a possibility, because Gary loves it. Which takes us into the chapel, and
it starts raining.
Can we talk about the rain? Because this really did annoy me. So it starts raining. Apparently, you can't really see any rain.
No, they just sensed it. You know, you can just sense it.
Phoebe whacks up her hood, and they scoot off to the chapel like it's a downpour that they couldn't possibly walk in. Walk into that chapel bone dry. You can't hear any rain.
No. Maybe they just wanted an excuse to get out of the public glare.
To the eyes of God.
Yeah, that doesn't hold up, does it? So they're in the chapel. Gary whips out a load of stuff from 1993. Yeah. Here, have some stuff.
He throws it at her.
Just have this stuff. Here we go. This is better than building a relationship, isn't it? Just stuff. What I will say about both of these scenes, both the scene in the graveyard and the scene in the chapel, is that the sound editing is very good. There's some music playing while they're in the graveyard, and then when they're in the chapel, there's this really nice warm echo to the conversation that they're having, and it really gives a bit more weight to what they're saying. I thought that was quite effective.
But he knows.
What?
Whether we'll win through. The war, I mean. Did you think I meant you and me?
Something like that. Hey, I've got you some stuff from night... from the American Embassy shop.
Oh, Gary. Oh.
Stockings. Chocolate. So, what's all this about you getting a job, then?
Well, why not? I used to have a lovely job before the war. Nice little shoe shop next door to the People's Palace. Once sold a pair of spats to Joe Loss.
Really? Joe Loss, eh?
Yeah. Ever so smart he is. Really dapper.
I'm still annoyed they didn't put any sound of rain.
Anyone got any ideas who Joe Loss is?
I thought for a second that he said Joe Swash, but he didn't.
He was a jazz musician.
Which is good, because we were intrigued by jazz this week.
Oh, it's almost
it's all tying together.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they're having a heart-to-heart. Phoebe talks about how she's upset that her dad won't let her help more with the war effort, won't let her pack parachutes or munitions. And now Gary's lies start to catch up with him, because he's got a little bit confused about what he'd said about his relationship with Marilyn Monroe. Now he lets it slip that he was actually married to Marilyn Monroe. Understandably, Phoebe's not happy about this.
No.
And then the lie becomes even more elaborate, because when Phoebe finds out that he's got a house in Cricklewood and finds out that he's got two bedrooms, she suggests that she could come and move in as his lodger. So now he develops the lie further, and not only was he actually married to Marilyn Monroe in America, but that she followed him back and that they are together in London.
They're definitely not together because she's got a problem with drugs and she's got a thing with two future presidents. So she didn't need to worry.
He didn't phrase it quite that way.
No?
It's such a ridiculous lie. Also, the fact that an American lady has supposedly moved to London, war-torn London. Yeah.
Well, that's how much she loves him.
Gary's pheromones are really potent.
Mm. The ladies do love him.
This lie could be seen as him coming clean, as he can't obviously tell the absolute truth, I've got a wife in 1993, that's too outlandish and crazy. But if he's coming clean and saying, I really like you, but I've got a wife, I need to decide what to do about her, how to act on these feelings I have. It turns out I love you more than my wife and I need to go on from here. If that's what he was doing, that would be an acceptable and understandable technique. But that's not what he's doing, because this isn't a reflection of what's actually happening. It's an embellishment and another lie about what's actually happening. Because he's creating this alternate Yvonne in the guise of Marilyn Monroe, who is evil, who is completely unsympathetic, and who has terrible, violent mood swings, and therefore he's the victim here. Whereas in the actual reality, he's not the victim. He's the villain.
But is that how he views his own reality? Does he view Yvonne as a moody wife and himself as a sympathetic victim in the marriage?
That's how it's manifesting itself, isn't it? Even though she doesn't suffer from terrible violent mood swings and he's not being treated badly at all, but he wants to excuse his actions by pretending that that's the case. It gets him a slap in the face.
Yes, and I said I quite liked the slap in the face because I thought he kind of deserved it after all the lying.
And he's not told her he's got a wife that lives here. So yeah, she would be angry.
Because she's been very upfront with him.
She's very. He met Donald.
I don't like it when television drama goes to a woman slapping a man routinely. That sits very uncomfortably for me because it would never, ever be entertained the other way around for very good reason. That would not be considered an acceptable reaction for a man. I don't think it's an acceptable reaction for a woman either.
You're completely right. And it's almost seen as the norm on TV.
It is, absolutely, that a woman will react by giving a slap, or a knee in the bollocks will happen very frequently. That will be seen as a comedy reaction, that a woman can just do that, whereas the gender reversal of that would never be permitted, and absolutely shouldn't be.
Especially in a comedic setting.
It's made him have a think, though. Although it's not quite clear what the think is that he's had. He's thought about something, and it's made him want to go to Huddersfield.
As often happens. Uh-huh. If you need a big think, where do you go?
Whatever it is, he needed to see Yvonne straight away.
Do you think he wanted to break up with her?
It genuinely isn't clear whether he's had a crisis of conscience and thought about what's happened and thought, this is my wife and I need to try and make this work, or I need to go and cut this off. It is completely ambiguous. It could be either of those that have prompted him to make the journey. He performs what may be the worst parking manoeuvre I've ever seen.
It's just bad parking, isn't it? Because it's not dramatic enough to be, dramatic. Yeah. There's no screech of tyres. There's no tyre tracks left. There's, it's not spinning the car out of control, diving out of it.
Somehow, Gary Sparrow managed to simultaneously park in three different parking spaces and a pedestrian crossing. That's just amazing. Yeah. From one small Rumbelows van to be that badly parked is a triumph. Well done.
It might be his greatest achievement of the series so far.
Maybe.
Congratulations on your terrible, terrible parking. A firework goes off.
I loved this bit.
This was your favourite bit.
I loved it. Can't really explain why, but I just loved it. So they've already set up that it's around the 5th of November and a firework goes off. There's a look of horror and shock on Gary Sparrow's face and he dives. But not, he doesn't really dive for cover because he just dives and lays on the car park floor. But it's just a brilliant moment of, I guess it's slapstick comedy. And it's a nice way of showing how his mind is torn between that 1940s mindset and his 1990s. Realities are starting to merge.
The security guard makes it clear that those open university type, they like to party, and chastises Gary for letting his wife come to one of these things. Very modern approach there to the act of matrimony. Well, it obviously was a party because Lisa Stansfield was playing, so clearly a party. Mm-hmm. There was some very uncomfortable 90s dancing going on in the student union bar.
Some more 90s jeans.
Oh, weren't there with some 90s outfits in general. Please do send us some pictures of you at the discotheque in the 1990s. We would love to see them for our Garrilery.
Garrilery.
Thank you. Jill.
Garrilery.
Well done. Another thing, which is they're in the Harold Wilson building. This thing that Gran and Marx like to do at every opportunity, which is stick in prominent Labour figures as the names of things all the time because they're a bunch of lefties, which is great because obviously so are we. So
I like it when writers put a bit of their personality in there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yvonne's having a dance with her tutor, or we assume it's her tutor, some old man.
It's very inappropriate.
It kind of is, yeah. Any other question of infidelity he has completely fabricated, whereas this, yeah, they're perhaps dancing a little close. I could see why you might think a little bit.
That's my wife!
That's my wife! Get your hands off my wife or I will lamp you.
Has he got that close to Phoebe yet?
There is still the hypocrisy of being very critical of things that he is actually doing just on the basis of suspicion.
He's ruled by emotions at this point, though, isn't he? Mm. He sees his wife in that crazy all-in-one black catsuit with the zips, dancing up close with her professor, and he's going to flip a switch, let's be honest.
I feel you've not given the catsuit the podcast time it deserves. We spent a lot of time last week talking about Yvonne's worry suit.
Mm. Big denim worry suit.
We've now got her dancing attire. Let's not let this slide.
Well, I guess the first impression of that fabulous outfit is that it would be a Challenge Annika sort of outfit for a night out.
Was it actually a one piece or was it a two piece? There was
actually it might have been skin tight, same colour but separate top and bottom.
There was so much going on. There were zips all over. It got a kind of polo neck to it, or a very high collar.
I think I was just staring at the zips a lot because there was one on each leg going up the back of her calf, two going down her thighs. They were going across the body. They were everywhere. There were zips everywhere. Silver zips aplenty.
Without wanting to sound creepy, it wasn't an unflattering outfit. did I pull that off? I take the reaction that I didn't manage to not sound creepy.
It didn't sound creepy. It was just the way he said it. It was very flattering.
Compared to everyone else in that room.
She was better dressed than anybody else in that room. You are absolutely right. And it was quite a bold choice and she pulled it off. But I've never seen anything like it in my life before.
I think it's probably one of those outfits that were acceptable in the 90s though.
I lived through the 90s and I have never seen anything like that.
It was sort of like a cat burglar sort of thing going on, like she was going to try and rob a precious gem from a museum in Huddersfield later on that evening, perhaps with the professor.
Spin-off. I see a spin-off in the works.
Oh my God, maybe that's her secret life.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
It would flesh out the character a bit and it does need it.
Mm.
One thing we did get to notice, which, because all of the scenes that we've seen Gary and Yvonne together in, they've either one or the other has always been sat down. The height disparity between the two of them, and Yvonne with her catsuit is wearing, it's probably a 3-inch heel, 2-inch, 3-inch heel.
I don't think they're a 3-inch.
Not a 3. Am I exaggerating?
I think she's wearing. There's a significant. 2 inches, maybe.
There's a significant heel on there.
Yeah, for sure.
And she's still head and shoulders shorter than Gary Sparrow.
Gary Sparrow is a very tall man.
Gary pulls her to one side because she's dancing with this tutor and acts out a little scene of what might happen between the tutor and Yvonne. She might persuade him back up to her room and does an impersonation of Yvonne in much the same way as you would be want to do with Phoebe.
Yeah.
Manages to make her sound a lot like Alan Bennett. Was I the only one that picked up on that?
Yeah, there was a bit of a Carry-On vibe, I thought, with his impersonation.
But then she dismisses that and suggests that maybe they go away from the party.
And she's very sweet. She very much reiterates how important he is to her, and you get the feeling that she cares and that he cares about her as well. However, there is also, he recounts what had happened following the argument with the suitcase. This is how out of control his lying is. He says, "We had this argument, and you made me sleep in the spare room." To which she responds, "I didn't make you sleep in the spare room." And he says that it felt like it or something like that. So he's just lied to her face about something that she did.
Yeah, and
or
she
rather
knows.
Didn't do.
That,
she knows
that didn't happen.
But he just goes straight to the lie. "Oh, remember that time you made me sleep in the spare room?" No, because that didn't happen. You're lying. I have caught you in this lie.
I think Yvonne is so patient with him in this scene because I would be absolutely mortified if I was in her position. First time she's met her professor. I mean, fair enough, they seem to get on pretty well. First time she's met her course mates. In quite a small students' union, everyone can see what's going on. How embarrassing. Yeah. And she's just like, well, I can see you're upset. Why don't we go up to my room? Yvonne, come on.
Why don't we come up to your room? Because my husband needs a good seeing to. Poor worried Gary. What will sort all of this out is a good seeing to. Her words, not his. Important to point out. The lack of trust that's involved as well. Of you've driven all the way to Huddersfield. It's not like it's round the corner. You've driven all the way to Huddersfield just because you don't trust me. You've dragged me away from my friends. But I'm going to reward you with sex for this. And she does definitely treat this like a reward.
So I get a sense that maybe she wants to feel wanted by him as well. And they've already had the discussion in the blue room about sexual performance and how the sex life's been a bit troubled lately. So maybe she just wants to put the work in, put a bit of practice in.
But it doesn't get that there anyway, because before they can go and leave, Ghost Phoebe pops up.
That is a strange moment.
It never happens again at any other point in the series, but we get a disembodied Phoebe speaking over Gary's shoulder, saying, take me back. In his heart, he doesn't know what he wants, but it's a very clumsy device in which to do that.
Yeah, it's almost like he thinks to himself, well, if I make this decision to go up to my wife's room right now, I'm abandoning Phoebe. So let's cool it off a bit, and I'll just bust some moves on the dance floor.
That wraps up episode 4 of series 1 of Goodnight Sweethearts. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back again next week. Thank you especially to Jill for joining us.
Thank you. It's been wonderful.
And Chris, we'll be back on WikiShuffle on Wednesday. WikiShuffle Wednesday.
Chris looked so startled by that. Like,
you remember? What? You remember that other podcast we did?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, that'll be coming out on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I'm doing some cross-promotion now.
Oh, we're cross-promotion. Play along. Oh, yeah. WikiShuffle Wednesday. Good night, Sweetcast. Check them out on the internet. WikiShuffle.co.uk.
We are a slick media machine. See you next week. I'm Philip Sharman. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Good Night Sweetcast is a WikiShuffle podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter at GNScast, or find out more at goodnightsweetcast.com.